There's a new team on the rise in the Willamette Valley, and no, it's not the Oregon Ducks. The Willamette Valley Jaguars are your local professional basketball team, competing throughout the Pacific Northwest, representing the Willamette Valley region in the Basketball League, or TBL. The Jaguars are composed of players from across the country who grind every single day to live out their dreams of playing professionally. Every Tuesday at 6 o'clock, we take you behind the scenes on the latest updates on all things Jaguars and get a firsthand account of what it takes to make it in the Basketball League. This is Jaguars Beyond the Baseline. Welcome into Jags Beyond the Baseline, everybody. I'm Isaac Doobie, your host, back for another season of Jags Beyond the Baseline, behind the scenes exclusive Jaguars content. I'm here today with Akita Clips, Akita Ramsey from Akita Clips, bodybuilder, barber, business owner, renaissance man. Appreciate you coming in. Appreciate you doing this interview. First of all, how you doing this morning?
Good, man. Appreciate you having me down. Feeling pretty good. Got up, got some movement in at the gym earlier today, and started with my devotionals, got some good movement, got on the highway, and here we are.
Mm-hmm. This is the first edition and first time we're sort of highlighting and spotlighting the sponsors and the people that sort of help the Jaguars do what they do, the partners that within the community that are creating an impact. And I'm really excited for people to hear your story and what you do, not only through your business, but what you do with your men's group. And how you've created a lot of change and have created an impact in the Albany community. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with this to, relate this to the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. How did you find out about the Willamette Valley Jaguars and get involved and get interested in partnering with them?
Okay, well, so last year I was part of the chamber and Chamber of Commerce out there in Albany, and I met one of the owners. We met real quick. I let them know that, I had a barber shop in case their guys were needing to not travel. And so that was the initial plug. And then somehow we lost touch throughout the season. And then this year, I actually was at the YMCA and I saw a basketball player. He was hooping a little bit. And I just got done with my little routine in the gym. And I saw Tay, mm-hmm. and yet it came, his name ended up being Tay, and we were just talking, just getting to know each other, and I think somewhere in the conversation, I let him know I cut hair, and he said, "What? You cut hair? Where you at?" I said, "I'm here in Albany." He said, "What? You're in Albany, right?" And so he didn't really know there, so there was a little bit of a loss of communication, and so then I was like, "Hey, man, I'll be there today, man. If you need cut, it's on me. It's cool, and so that's where it kind of began. He came up later on after the workout, and I let him know a little bit about where I came from. He let me know where he came from, and he was a great kid, and yeah, it was good vibes. And he said, "Man, I'd love for you to meet our coach, Mary, right? She has an amazing story, being the only, all female staff." And I'm like, "Okay, let's go." And so he connected us, and Mary and I had a conversation, and kind of that's where it began.
So with you made the initial connection with Coach Mary, initial connection with Tay, mm-hmm. then Coach Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I want to get into a bit of your personal story.
Okay.
Your upbringing. You have a pretty interesting story in how you ended up in Albany, how you ended mm-hmm. up cutting hair, mm-hmm. and how you came to do all the different things that you do in your life in bodybuilding and motivational speaking and being a wellness health coach. Mm-hmm. Let's start from the very, very beginning. You were born in New York, mm-hmm. And you lived in foster care for till you were about 5 years old. Mm-hmm. You moved around the country a bit, and then you ended up in Sweet Home, Oregon after living in Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
For a while, mm-hmm. A bunch of other places. How long did you stay in Sweet Home, and how did you end up in Albany?
Okay, yeah. You're right. I was born in New York, upstate. Dad and mom separated for a period of time. She moved to Phoenix to get some things set up and ready for me to come live with her. And so I got to Phoenix. I was about 5 years old. I had an older sibling and a little sister at that time. And Mom was a pretty hard worker. You know, she raised us, ended up with five of us, raised us, you know, solo for a period of time. But she roofed houses and among other things that she did down there in Phoenix. And she roofed with some family that had family in Sweet Home. And so I remember one day after the first day of school, you know, after moving around a lot, like you said, we just kind of moved where we could at the time. And she was like, "We're moving to Oregon." I said, "Huh? Where?" and so I had to remember like fifth grade geography. I'm like, it's up there, but okay, it's right up there. So we pack up the station wagon. We get halfway there. Station wagon breaks down. We get a ride the rest of the way. And I remember rolling into this little town and seeing the buildings. And I'm like, okay, we're downtown. Right? And they said, "Yeah, we're downtown." And I kept seeing, you know, the word Sweet Home. And in my mind, I'm thinking the slogan, right? And so I asked, I was like, "Why is every window say Home Sweet Home?" They said, no, that's the name of the town. I said, ah, I started laughing. So yeah. And then, so we roll into town. I said, "Well, hey, you know, how many black folks lived out here?" You know, although, you know, I am mixed. Mom is mixed with white, Puerto Rican, maybe some German, black, and dad is black and black native. And my middle sister is, you know, Hispanic. So, you know, we're pretty colorful, but we, you know, most of us look like me, you know, complexion wise. And he said, "Oh yeah, there's a few." So I'm thinking, I'm moving from Phoenix, you know, there's a pretty good mix, Hispanic, black, white. Oh, you know, maybe a third of us, right? So when we get to school, it's us and a couple adopted kids, right? And so, okay, so we just adjusted, you know. And for me, you know, I was already kind of used to moving around. And so I was used to being the new kid and being uncomfortable at first, and then coming out of my, you know, uncomfortability and usually being a little extra. You know, I had the ADD. I didn't really pay attention much. And so I developed a lot of relationships, you know. And when I got there, and I remember having to go get my hair cut at this little place, and I'm thinking, okay, they know how to do a flat top fade. It's fine, right? And I get in there, and there's these ladies, bless their heart, had no idea what to do with my hair. They were with the clippers, and I don't remember what they did, but I got home and I looked a mess. And so I'm like, well, it's time to figure this thing out, you know. And so I went to the local, whatever it was, Walmart, some mart, got some clippers, you know, some $20 clippers. And then I got Sports Illustrated magazine, Jet magazine, and I watched Martin Lawrence, Fresh Prince. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna figure out this flat top fade. So I got good at doing my own when I was about, at this time now I'm about 14, fit 14. And so I got good at doing that. And then my little brother, he's 8 years younger than me. So he's probably, what, six, whatever that math is. So I started on his. And so I was always cutting my brother's and mine hair. And a couple years later, I just kind of had clippers with me always. And my friends were like, "Hey, man, give me a haircut." And I was, okay, let's figure this out. So I always just used a long guard to begin with. And we just put a shorter one on. And so long story short, I'd done that for 30 years. I had a, you know, a set of clippers in my car at all times, and they'd be like, "Hey, Keita, man, hook me up with the fade. Oh, I got you." Right. And, you know, and I, at the time, you know, I liked music. I liked singing. So oftentimes I'd be cutting hair, singing songs, and they're like, "Oh man, you should get a barber shop and sing songs." Right. And at that time I was kind of in survival mode. So I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Sounds good." Probably never happened. That was my initial mindset. So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What did you like so much about cutting hair when you started it, that drew you to it and kept mm-hmm. you doing it for about mm-hmm. 30 years?
Some of it is the art piece. I grew up liking to draw. Mm-hmm. And so I was always kind of a reference drawer. I would just get lost in drawing pictures. And so part of it was the art piece. I like to see a good fade on somebody. And the other piece was definitely the relationship piece, you know, because, you know, you're in a tight space and one or both of you guys are going to open up at some point. And so with me, just loving meeting new people and developing relationships that kind of just fit, you know. Yeah, so that, I guess that'd be the quick answer.
One thing I read when I was reading up on you, you mentioned how you struggled a bit with mental health mm-hmm. growing up mm-hmm. and you had an incorrect diagnosis yeah. when you were a teenager. Mm-hmm. One thing that you mentioned was that you felt like the community was a big part in played a big part in uplifting you and supporting you. Mm-hmm. through that journey and throughout your childhood and adolescence. Mm-hmm. Who are those people that inspired you and supported you to keep you going and uplift you?
Absolutely, yeah. So some of the first people that I remember in Sweet Home, when we finally settled in Sweet Home, there was a couple places that we moved around to until we settled to what came to be my godparents right next door to them. They were foster parents, pastor and wife. There were always many kids at their house, and you know, we were always allowed to go over there and play and go to church, and they were just a loving couple, you know, husband and wife with all kinds of kids, with, you know, some foster, a couple that were, you know, birthed to them. And that was my first initial experience with help outside of, you know, our home, you know, and they were instrumental in teaching me and getting me through my faith, my first experience with faith. Mom always had us in and out of churches as we moved around, so I know that she had a faith base, you know, but, you know, I was young. I just kind of went because I was supposed to. But so they were very instrumental through many chapters of my life. And there was a time where me and my siblings also lived with them for a period of time so Mom can take care of some medical things, you know, when I was about 15, 16. And outside of that, like I said, 16, 17, I began to kind of start living with friends, figuring out how to finish school and things like that. And around 17 was when I first experienced depressive symptoms. Well, I didn't know what they were at the time. It was, I just remember waking up one day and I kind of had brain fog. I kind of was not with it, and tried to explain it to friends, and they're, "Oh, you're fine. Drink a beer or something," right? And I was like, "Nah, it's something different." So, and it progressed for a few days, and I began to start to isolate and not be around people, and which was the opposite of what I was, right? I didn't understand it. So anyway, I had these weird symptoms for about 2 weeks, and then it went away. And then I woke up one day, and I was kind of normal, right, feeling. And I noticed that cycle would happen every few months. And down the road, finally, when I was probably around 18, I got the Oregon Health Plan. I was having these symptoms, and I went into the doctor, gave him this list, and they said, "Oh, you have depression." I'm like, "Well, what's that?" I said, "How can I be depressed? I love people. I'm, you know, I'm funny. I, you know, I'm always happy. Like, what's?" And he said, "It could be a chemical thing. It could be a hereditary thing. You know, Mom had struggled in different areas with her mental health. But I think that also what exacerbated it probably for me, I would guess, is 17 years old, living with friends. I didn't have a lot of boundaries. I got a little bit more freedom, so I started hanging out with the guys and picking up the greenery scenery and then the bottles and things and right at the same time. And I think that, as you know, me, you know, going into adolescence, it just was a recipe for what I ended up with, you know, or at least it helped. And so they had, you know, they diagnosed me with major depression, and they tried to give me pills, and it never really helped. It just made me feel worse. And so I went on a whole journey from, you know, age 17 to about 36 of having periods of depression and the pills not working. So I pick up the bottle and it just makes things worse. You know, I make bad choices. You know, I get, you know, in trouble with the law from things like MIPs, minor possessions, DUIs, different things. I became violent also at that age, you know, 17, 18. I was street fighting a lot. And at that point, for me, each time I would get in trouble, I would definitely feel bad, you know, come to, get sobered up. And, you know, there were community, which were, you know, law enforcement. They treated me pretty good, actually, you know. There are those that, you know, because of the color of their skin, they have gotten treated a certain type of way. And me being in Linn County, oftentimes they would get me in the back of the car and they say, "Kid, what are you doing? You're not what this record says you are. You figure it out, right?" And so they showed me love in that way. And so it made me believe in the system. And so that, where again, you know, we could fast forward the tape years down the road, I would get references for jobs from law enforcement with a kid who already has a record, and that's not typical, you know, at least from what I saw, you know. And so that's why I say, you know, parole and probation, different times, you know, those people would just step up. And for me, whenever I would do something wrong, it it was easier for me to be accountable. I definitely always admitted whatever it was that I did, and I would feel bad, and I knew that if I can just stay sober, I'm never gonna be in trouble, because that was definitely the math, is if there was any time alcohol or things were involved, and that would end up with me getting myself caught up. And the times where I was clean and sober, it never happened. You know what I mean? And so I got to a place, and, you know, kind of bouncing around, but I got to a place finally in 2016 from, you know, 20 years of that cycle of doing well for a while and then not, and then being out here and then not. I did something different, and I checked into what's called an Oxford House, and that's a recovery home. And, you know, for those that struggle with addiction. And so I got voted in because I was, you know, symptomatic. I was feeling the symptoms of depression, you know, and already thinking about ways to get away with drinking while on probation, right? So I'm like, nah, I got to do something different. So I checked into the Oxford House, and I actually lived there for about 6 years. And that was the first time in my life outside of living next door to Carol and Dennis, who I talked about earlier, who are my godparents. We stayed there for a couple of years. Outside of that, that was the longest I've ever lived anywhere. And at that time, 40 something years longer than that, you know. So it showed me a sense of stability. It showed me that I can go through my ups and downs with my mental health, because I did have those. I had what's called some periods of hypomania, which to others, it could look like someone was maybe on meth or something. They have all this energy and they don't really know what to do with it. So with a lot of trial and error, I learned how to manage that. I learned how to communicate it to people that I was around, let them know, hey, I'm about to have this cycle, but I will take medicine at this stage of my depression just so that I could sleep. Because you know, throughout the year, it's mostly just, like I said, depressive symptoms. And then if you have this period of like this hypomania, if you don't take care of it, you can end up in a mental ward, which I actually did a couple of times years prior because I didn't know what it was. So I was able to stay there for 6 years, understand how to go through my ebbs and flows, stay clean and sober. And while I was there, I was my main job was working at a home building plant, and, you know, building houses at like a manufacturing home plant. And on part-time, I was doing personal training. You know, I've been doing that since about 2012. So at that point for, you know, a handful of years. And then so I got introduced when I was 38 years old to the sport of bodybuilding, yeah. Right? And yep. That was introduced to me by a friend of mine, Tony, who plays bass at our church. He was an older gentleman. I didn't know what his age was, but I remember going to his gym and seeing pictures and cool trophies. I'm like, man, that looks, man, you look good, man. What, how long ago was that? 20 years ago? He's like, no, that was a couple years ago. I said, how old are you? He said, I'm 53. I said, what? Right. And so he explained to me that bodybuilding wasn't necessarily a performance based sport, to where you're running and you're jumping and you're moving fast, where, you know, as you age, that slows down. He said, well, if you can be in a controlled environment, the weight room, mm-hmm. and you have a good, you know, foundation, and you have a good coach, you can do the thing. And I'm like, well, a couple things. I said, well, I've got 2 major knee surgeries, quad tendon tears, 2 lower back surgeries, so I don't lift heavy weights, and I'm afraid of steroids, right? So he said, oh, no, they have this new class of bodybuilders now. They're a little smaller. We wear board shorts. It's called Men's Physique. And I said, and they said, they don't judge your legs. And I'm like, well, I have pretty big legs and I kind of got a blocky waist. I was trying to talk myself out of it. And he's just like, just give it a rip, right? So I hired a guy, Courtney Oling, in town. And I went from 140 something pounds, a little fluffy, probably in the 20% body fat range, down to about 200 in about 4 months. And I was able to enter a novice bodybuilding show, a novice division, and masters over 35 division, right? And I won both classes, and I ended up winning an overall masters, and I was like, whoa. And I was getting this feedback from other athletes and coaches, hey, are you going to nationals? I said, what's that mean? And they said, well, if you go and you place a top 2, you can come back a IFBB Pro, International Federation Bodybuilder. So like Jay Cutler, Flex Wheeler, Ronnie Coleman, that same league. And I'm like, nah, I'm all right, right? So I just kind of, I did that as a goal. You know, I set it, I achieved it. And, you know, earlier on, even, like I said, I'm kind of bouncing around, but just earlier on in my life, I was pretty organized outside of home. You know, I always had a planner. I always set goals, and I found that I was really good at being goal oriented. You know, in the middle of my stages of depression and or binge drinking. So it was a structure, right? It was something that I could focus on and then I can lock in and I can do. And So I did a show about a month later because I was in shape. I did this in Washington and same result. I ended up winning multiple classes and multiple, you know, I got another overall and same feedback. And so anyway, at that point, I hired another coach and we worked together, and in our first show we didn't do as well, and I only wanted to do one more show just to beat my last showing, right? And so again, I'm still at the plan, I'm still at the Oxford House, and I ended up doing one more show and I won the open division and two overalls, right? And so I won like, I don't know, five different categories that day. And then finally, and then so this now we're in 2018, and they said, "Hey, man," when I was picking up my trophy and got the mic, they have you speak, and said, "Man, if you don't go to nationals, just quit." He's like, "Because you're winning all these local shows," and so at Clayton Homes, they put a bucket in the break room, and they helped sponsor me and go to Pittsburgh in 2019. Now I'm 42 years old. I do my first masters, my masters. National show with in two categories, 35 and up, 40 and up. I won both of those, so I won a card in each division, and I did, like I said, I did that from living in a recovery home. So it was cool to be able to show people that you can do hard things. You know, I wasn't impressed by like the trophies. I wasn't impressed taking my shirt off and oiling up, but I was impressed from the journey to get me there, and then I can share it with other people that have some of these same struggles, and it might not be bodybuilding, but you can apply these principles in your life, right? So it was a good also tool to have in my tool belt as a coach, as a personal trainer. Good accolade, right? And so that's kind of a long answer to some of what you're getting at. And and the coaching kind of led me into the barbershop. So yeah.
How long did it take you from going from, you know, starting to winning that first that first event that you won?
How long did that take you? It was about 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah, it was about four months because
that's just insanely quick, in my opinion, put on that much muscle, be able to compete and win an event that quickly.
Well, so I guess I couldn't back up. Probably 15 or so is when I started lifting weights in high school. So. You know, I started lifting weights at Carol and Dennis's house. They had the old sand weights. And I remember I didn't know what I was doing. I was just did some bench. I did some curls. And then I went into the room to change and I looked, I'm like, whoa, I didn't understand what a pump was. I'm like, whoa, my arms were bigger. My chest. Whoa. So I got kind of addicted to just the pump thing. Yeah. And so throughout high school, I would work out off and on. And throughout the years I would have periods of time where I'd work out. So I built a solid foundation. And also my mom was very muscular, right? So I had some genetics. And if you want, I can just pull up real quick what the first transformation looked like for me. Let's see down here. Right here. So that's what we... So like I said, about 240 something and just...
Holy crap. Got
peeled, you know, and the other good and fun and cool thing was that I was able to do those things. 100% of the people I competed against on the stage were shooting all kinds of drugs, you know what I mean? And so I thought, hey, man, I feel pretty good being an old man with all these injuries and all these issues and able to make it to like an elite level where, you know, no one actually in my county has gotten that far, you know what I mean?
And I don't
brag about it much. I don't really talk about it much, you know. But again, I use it for some fuel and motivation for people to know that you can do hard things, even at middle age.
Yeah, and even just to ground you and keeping you focused and disciplined on something. Mm-hmm. So this was did you start while you were in the Oxford home? No.
Yes. The bodybuilding prep.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
What was that like? of just starting out while being in that and still recovering and mm-hmm. yeah, being in recovery. What was that like?
It was somewhat challenging to go from kind of eating whatever you want or counting your calories to being in a house with 11 other guys who kind of eat whatever they want. And oftentimes when people go from addiction, they go from the drug addiction, alcohol addiction, to food addiction, right? Mm. So oftentimes most other guys in the house were eating whatever they wanted, right? And so there's that temptation. It taught me, again, it just taught me discipline in my yeah. life. And I kind of, like I said, I took to it. It took me a couple of weeks to get the program down, and then it was just kind of like just flipped a switch in my mind to go, okay, boop, I'm going to do this because this is going to be the outcome, you mm-hmm. know? And if I deviate, the outcome won't, you know, be ideal. So for me, it was pretty easy to do that, yeah. to develop new habits and routines to something better. And I'm, yeah. I'm kind of much like that even today, like yeah. with new things, picking up a new habit that's going to be helpful. I just kind of lock in, you know, some people call it type A, some people call it OCD. I don't know. But I know for me, if it's something that's going to help improve me, oh man, I'm going to lock in, you know, so.
You're the only professional bodybuilder to come out of Lane County, mm-hmm. Or I'm sorry, Lynn County,
yeah.
from what I've heard. Mm-hmm. What challenges does being in a place with a lot of limited opportunities to compete with other people, mm-hmm. train with other people, mm-hmm. what challenges does that present to you?
Absolutely. Some challenges is because I'm a fairly motivated person. However, I have more discipline than most people that I'm around, even at the gym. And so you show up to, you know, Physique or any of these gyms, and you stand out a little bit. You look different. And one thing that was hard for me is not feeling like a muscle head. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't that guy. I usually don't run around with tank tops on even in the summer. And so there was that aspect of feeling like you don't belong in that place, even though mm-hmm. you love being in that place. So there was that. And then being able to train with others that do the same thing. I mean, I can't say that there aren't other competitors, because every now and then there'll be some, you know, in the gym. But oftentimes, man, you wanna vibe with other bodybuilders. You wanna vibe with those that are better than you, bigger than you, stronger than you. And so it was very, very challenging. I'd have to go to like Salem every now and then. I could catch somebody at a gym if we could schedule it right. Or a couple of times I drove all the way up to Portland, and for me, you know, it's like hour and a half from my house to go to a gym to where I can be around other bodybuilders. So there was that aspect. The other aspect was being a professional athlete. You don't necessarily just get, well, you don't just get paid. You know what I mean? You have to then brand yourself. And with any shows that happen, because there are no pro shows at that time, at least in Oregon. So you had to travel, you know, to make a name for yourself and get, you know, paid being in the top five. And so, for me, that was the initial Instagram. It was, hey, you guys, get an Instagram so you can get 10,000 followers and you can have all these sponsors. Well, I like using social media as like a digital diary, at times. And, you know, it goes in waves. You can scroll back on my social media and you'll see months where I'm just kind of engaging and being relatable. And then you'll see months of nothing, right? Wow. And so I didn't really get much traction from Instagram, you know, but what I did do was, once I got into the community and started being in business, I asked a few of the other business owners. I was like, I don't know how sponsorships and things work, but I'm a guy that could use a sponsorship, you know, anything, like whatever, you know. I have a pretty good social media reach. I have, you know, a good network of people that I can, maybe we can trade services. I don't know what that looks like. So there were a few that let me know that, hey, when you're ready, let me know, I'll pitch in, you know what I'm saying? So it was hard to get sponsors, you know what I mean? Because the bodybuilding community isn't big. You know, there's some boxers there that do fair, you know, there's a little bit of boxing there. You got your younger athletes, you know, that the basketball teams, the soccer teams, all these things. And for me, I'm like, wow, I'm supposed to be a pro athlete, but it don't really feel that way out here, you know. But when I do go to other cities, I visited real quick down at Las Vegas, and I went to a gym, and for you to share with those at gyms like that you're an IFBB pro, they're like, what? you're an IBB. No way. Mm-hmm. What? You're a natural as well. How do you look like that? I'm yeah. So it's pretty cool, you know, because again, I'm not out there for like the accolade of and the praise,
yeah.
But it does get lonely a little bit out there in Linn County, being me in that regard. So
I want to shift to talking about your barbershop mm-hmm. and Akita Clips.
Yeah.
Just for clarification, I want you to kind of talk about, so you were in Sweet Home for a good majority of your life, it sounds like, mm-hmm. when you moved there
yeah.
in your young adolescence teens, yep. and then stayed there for quite a bit into your up until about 10 years ago, right?
Well, no. So, yeah, I stayed in Sweet Home from, you know, early teen to mid-teen, you know, so a good handful of years, but I would always go back and forth. So I think I left Sweet Home for good probably when I was 26, so
okay.
a good period of time, but I'd stayed in Linn County and the surrounding areas, so
okay.
they're not much
gotcha.
Different from each other.
Gotcha.
Lebanon, Albany, Brownsville, they're all pretty much Linn County.
Uh-huh.
It's much the same.
Okay, and then you eventually ended up in Albany
mm-hmm.
about 10 years ago,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
2016?
Correct.
I think we mm-hmm. talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want you to talk about to start is, what was the transition like? I know you were working other jobs in Linn County
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
working
mm-hmm.
In the area before starting Akita Clips, but
mm-hmm.
what inspired you and what was that transition like of owning your own business
mm-hmm.
and going from where you were to now owning your own business? Just started up, what, last year?
Yeah, 20, what's right now? So 20 is about to be 26. So 2024.
So last year, yeah.
Yep. Excuse me. Last year in July. So I'm a okay. year and a few months
yeah.
old as having my own barbershop. So it kind of started back in COVID days. What was that? 2021, somewhere in there. I was working at the home building plant, and they gave us an opportunity if we wanted to take the leave and get unemployment. But it was hard for me to take that because I didn't like to feel like I was just not working and getting free money necessarily. So maybe it was a pride thing. But I also really, really wanted to be a fitness and bodybuilding coach, some kind of coach, right? So what I did is I stepped out in faith. I walked away from that job and started doing some online coaching. Before that, it was always just one-on-one in-person training. So I didn't think that people would value, you know, online coaching because maybe I didn't as much, but I was definitely wrong. I ended up, you know, doing some coaching for a period of time. I locked into my pro debut. I did that because prior to that, I got pretty depressed. I stopped working out. I stopped checking in with my coach. Ended up pretty depressed. So I was well overweight. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to focus on this show. I'm going to get myself back in shape. I'm going to coach some people and see how that looks, being an entrepreneur, and that way living my gifting and live where I loved to do. And then, so I did that for a period of time. And then down the road, I ended up, you know, meeting my now wife, and she encouraged me to check out, you know, barber school. I ended up, and how I've checked that out was I was training a kid who was trying to make it to the pro leagues abroad at the gym, and he let me know that he was going through this barbering program, and he said, you should check it out, and maybe. So fast forward the tape, I think to 23, yeah, somewhere in there. I ended up going to visit the school and in Salem. I live in Albany, and by the time I left, I had signed up for school, and the barbering instructor at that time signed up with some coaching for me, right? So it was kind of funny because, you know, it just kind of comes up in conversation. You know, I look like I might be an athlete of some kind, so it would usually come up in conversation. So that was where the journey began.
Mm-hmm.
Went through 6 months of schooling, which was awesome because there was a program out at the time that was a variation of unemployment. So if at any time you received COVID relief, if you got into school full time, they would pay you every week a wage. And so I was able to go to school for 6 months full time and got a small wage every week to pay bills. And I got licensed. So while I was in school, I did a lot of networking. I visited a lot of shops. Excuse me. I visited a lot of shops between Albany and Salem. I knew I was going to live in Albany, but I would work at either place just for the experience. And so by the time I graduated, there was probably about 7 different shops that wanted me to work with them because of, you know, I showed up with a good attitude, willing to learn, and that. And so, and I also collected a lot of people's phone numbers as we talked about what I was doing, and I made a file on my phone. And by the time I got done, I had like 80 or so people in the queue that I can just start. Every day I would just send out 5 text messages. That's it. Hey, and I ended up working at a buddy shop in Albany for 2 days, and then another buddy shop in Salem for 2 days. So when I got out, I began to get a pretty good solid clientele built. And so then I went from the 2 shops to the 1 shop in Albany, and I worked there for about almost a year before I went on to my own space. And while I was there at my friend's shop, I wanted to do some kind of men's group. You know, like I said, I'm a man of faith. You know, I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus. But I don't believe in just to preaching at everybody all the time, throwing a bunch of Bible at them and scriptures and things. I just believe in walking right. And then if, you know, if I can get with some other people in a room and a book and relate, I want to do that. So my friend gave me permission to start a men's group on Wednesday nights over there. And so I would have anywhere from 7 to 11 guys come in, and I didn't have any idea how I was going to structure it. I just knew I wanted to get guys in a room who maybe A, aren't comfortable with church, B, it just didn't work out for their schedule, or whatever, church hurt, whatever. And those who struggle with addiction oftentimes, or maybe having a record, oftentimes get that feeling of feeling guilty walking into a church, right? So why don't you guys just come vibe with us? And so it started there. And the curriculum I actually used was from another pastor named Mike Todd. He's out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I watched a series of his called Damaged But Not Destroyed, Trauma to Triumph. I watched the whole series, and I was so amped, I wanted to share it with somebody. So that's where the roots of that came from. We would watch a video, we would have a book, and we would go through that series. And it's pretty crazy how it ended up, because I started following that pastor because my wife suggests that I follow him just on social media outside of my own church, Hope Church in Albany. For her birthday, I actually bought tickets for us to go to Tulsa to go visit his church. And it was so crazy. This is how God works, right? So now we're in March, okay? And I started the series in like November, December. And it's March, and I get there, and he's preaching on. First, we go to the museum downtown to where the Tulsa riots happened back in the whatever it was, the 40s, or I can't remember, but they rebuilt the black, it's called the Black Wall Street. So I go down there, we go to this museum, and the first exhibit in there is like a whole barbershop scene, like a hologram barbershop scene. So, oh man, that's cool, right? Because at the time in March, I'm already thinking about maybe transitioning to another shop.
Wow.
But not opening my own shop. Uh-huh. I just didn't have the confidence or think I had the finances to do it. So I see that. And then we get to church a couple of days later, and he's doing a series called Fresh Cut. Well, a lot of times Mike Todd will have props up there. And I noticed that the first thing I noticed, I was like, man, he isn't very cleaned up today. That's strange, right? He's usually all crispy and lined up. And then I looked back and on the stage, it looked like there was a barber chair. And I was like, oh, that's random. Well, anyway, the series was called Fresh Fruit. The topic of the day was called Fresh Cut. And it's talking about how God prunes you sometimes, and it hurts, to grow you. And the same concept of cutting hair, you know what I mean? And so he ended up on that day having his barber come out and put him in a chair and cut his hair on stage, right? And so I'm getting goosebumps. I'm thinking, whoa, I'm all the way over here in Tulsa across the country using this man's series in this barbershop, me thinking maybe I should get my, you know what I mean? And so basically that was awesome. And so fast forward the tape, I begin to start looking for my own shops, and it just wasn't working out for what I wanted. I had a budget. I almost settled for a place close to downtown, and I was getting ready to sign some paperwork. It was small. It was kind of overpriced, but I thought maybe I can build my brand downtown Albany. Well, I asked this business owner, the owner of this place, a question about how you pay. Like, how do you pay your lease? Is it credit, debit, cash, check? What does that look like? Well, his response on a text message was, well, it sounds like you're undercapitalized. Here's some resources. Have a good day. So he basically just shut the door on me coming into that space, right? A week later, one of my coaching clients who I've been helping, you know, make healthier choices, lose some weight, did his check-in, and I got off the phone with him. And then I thought, Brian has properties. Maybe I should call him. Maybe he has something, right? And so I called him. I'm like, man, do you got anything? You know, maybe 800 square feet, you know, nothing crazy, just enough to put a couple chairs in, you know. He's like, nah, I don't really have that. He's like, but I have about 1,200 something square feet in North Albany. And North Albany is, you know, a little bit more upscale part of town. And he gave me the number and price, and it was less than what I was about to settle for. Mm-hmm. But then I was just like kind of discouraged, because I told him the same thing I told you with what the guy's response was, what my question was. He's like, oh man, he must still live in the 80s. People use credit all the time. That's fine. Right. And I said, well, a couple of things. I said, well, my credit score is somewhere in like the low 550s, and I have a record. So I don't know if that'll work. He's like, you know what? I own the whole lot. Let's talk. Right. And so we had a conversation. Wow. He put some numbers together, and long story short, I was able to get into my own barbershop. I was able to, at the time I started with 3 total chairs. Now I have 6 total chairs in the space, because I was able to open up some more space within the space. And so that's just how God works. And I'm like, man, I have to steward this thing well, because it wasn't from something that I did and got. It was literally, like I said, it was a God thing and how it works. And so now I've been there for, like I said, 1 year and 3 months. Within our first year, we got an accolade for the best shop in town. And I don't believe that I'm the best technical barber. You know, I believe that there's barbers out there that do very good artwork. They do very good razor work. However, I do believe that I'm in the upper echelon of loving people, right? You know what I mean? And so that is what the environment is. When you Google Akita Clips, the keyword you'll see is atmosphere. It won't be fade. It won't be cuts. It'll be atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Because what I wanted was a barbershop that babies, women, and seniors could feel comfortable in, right? Because we can get our hair cut in a closet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't really matter where we end up getting our hair cut, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was able to have a couple guys, Malachi and Eddie, started with me up there. And Malachi had already been licensed at another place. Eddie started with me at the other shop. He had just got out of school. And I had another friend 6 months later. Jacob came up to join us. And since then, I hired on a few more people. And so with all those people, you know, just doing great work and treating people good, we got an accolade that we didn't have to pay for. Because I'll also have to say that there are often times you'll go in the businesses around here and you'll see this Top of the Valley Award and Best Of. And what I found out was, as I've got nominated to be in a couple of those categories. Well, what I found out was they said, oh, hey, you're nominated. So buy $500 worth of promotional products so that you can share it online and look professional and then get votes, and then you can win, right? And so I was like, nah. So I passed on it. And, you know, there was a couple of people that ended up buying the accolade, and they got it. They emailed me, hey, you got second. I'm like, cool. Well, a few months later, I got another flyer, and it looked like there was a plaque. I almost threw the flyer away and because it looked like another one of those things, right? And it said Best Of on there, right? And I'm like, oh. So I read the fine print, and it said, actually, congratulations. You got the best barbershop according to Google reviews. Claim your trophy. Scan here. And I was like, oh. So yeah. I scanned it, and that's what it was. And we were able to get that in a short period of time. And so it helps me. It humbles me, but I'm also proud of that accolade, because I didn't really know what I was doing as a business owner.
Yeah.
I didn't have a huge business. I didn't have any business plan. I wasn't prepared to even get one. We had a conversation 1 week. A couple weeks later, I had some keys to a building. You know what I mean? And so now I'm in the middle of revamping the men's group and figuring out what days and times work better. I was doing it evenings. I think I'm going to transition more to mornings now with the guys. So, yeah, man, that's a little bit how I ended up into barber shop, Akita Clips. You know, I started to develop my brand, my personal brand on Google when I was at the other shop. So I did get a couple of reviews on the Akita Clips name. And then when I moved into the barber shop is when we were able to get more reviews. And yeah.
Were there any moments where, obviously, going from working in a barbershop to owning your own business and, mm-hmm. and being sort of the boss of everybody else, were there any moments you were like, whoa, like, I'm in a little over my head right now. I'm not sure if I can I can handle this. Were there any moments like that early on?
100%. I actually just came out of a pretty good season of burnout and depression. Uh-huh. From probably about January
uh-huh.
to about June. Yeah. I was feeling that. I was feeling the feelings of overwhelmed, like making sure that I'm serving the community, making sure, because even if you're only cutting hair for 5 or 6 hours of that day, you're really working about as many hours as you're awake, right? Because you have to think about social media, you have to think about networking, you have to think about, are your barbers getting everything they need, or do they feel comfortable, or do they feel good? So there was just a lot of hats
yeah.
spinning, right? Outside of just life, you know, yeah. being a husband, being a dad, and being a coach, you know, so constantly you're pouring into people, right? And my cup was emptying and emptying and emptying, right? And so I actually had a pretty good breakthrough last June. You know, I had a pretty long prayer of what's called a prayer of deliverance. I got to let a lot of things go I didn't know I was holding, and I was also able to lock in on a few non-negotiables with myself that I would often skip after a period of maybe coming out of depression, which is, you know, making sure I'm getting my quiet devotional time, making mm-hmm. sure I'm eating healthy, that I'm moving, that I'm breath work, even managing my sleep, managing my moods. And like, and these things are real easy to go out the door and forget once you get locked in and focused on whatever. It could be a sport, it could be a relationship. And so once I realized that, I said, okay, I'm not going to get in my own way again, or I'm going to do my best not to do that. And so historically, whenever I would come out of a depressed state, like clockwork, 6-8 weeks, I'm depressed again because I'm burnt out. I'm doing too much. I'm not taking care of myself. And so now I figured that math out. It's keep these non-negotiables intact. You will have hard days. You'll have hard months. You'll have hard weeks. But you'll be able to have the bandwidth to be able to show up to a podcast, to be able to show up to your family at home, because you know my wife and kids and family suffered while I suffered. It's not just me, you know. When you're checked out, they're hurt, you know. So I'm like, nah, I can't do this anymore. So yeah, I'm in a pretty good season right now of blessing, of increase, but also of grounding, you know. So
what ideas do you have to renovate and expand the barbershop?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So at first I want to expand the brand name all throughout Linn County, right? Uh-huh. Because again, there were many times and many chapters where there were many people that supported me on my journey in this county. So I want to be able to give back in that regard.
Yeah.
My first idea was to expand a brick and mortar over to like Sweet Home location. So it's about 45 or so minutes east of us. But I think I'm going to, instead of doing that first, because I have a truck now, and I'm thinking about my original idea back in 2007 when I thought about maybe being a barber, is, oh, I want to be a mobile barber because that's what I already do, right? And so my thought now moving into, whether it be next year or the year after, I'll get a trailer,
yeah,
hitch it to my truck, and I'll just go pull up in some of these communities for a day or two, you know, have people book some appointments. Oh, I'm coming into town on Tuesday. So that'll be where I'll be able to hopefully, you know, get the brand spread out to those different locations. And then when the budget allows, throw up a brick and mortar. And again, it sounds like a ton, but I will definitely manage my time. And so meaning like I might only work at one of those locations one day. You know what I mean? I don't want to burn myself out cutting hair, because it's not the hair cutting that burns me out. It's the engagement and relationships and conversations, to where, you know how men are, like we only have so many words we can even say or take in every day, right?
Yep.
And so when you're doing that on top of art, on top of business owning, it can drain you, right?
Yeah.
So what I noticed when I first started, 5 or 6 days a week, I went down to 5 days a week at another shop. Then I went down to 4 days a week at the other shop. And then when I opened up, Same thing. I went from 6 to 5 to 4. Now I'm down to 3. But I still work earlier hours. I work, you know, a good amount of hours so that income wise, I'm still able to, you know, make it make sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, that's kind of what expansion sounds like for me, you know. I'm excited to be able to start working with the Jags as well, again, yeah. with their haircutting. Mary and I are throwing some things together as far as our partnership goes.
Yeah.
And the partnership there is more of like community involvement. So like when they have events, you know, where I met you at, I show up, I support monetarily, you know, whenever it is I can afford it. But I have more time, I feel like, than I have monetary. So I'm like, man, I'll give you guys my time, you know. And so I was really excited to be able to talk to her about possibly, you know, pulling up courtside before a game, you know, doing some haircuts for the guys. You know, they save a trip, they save a few bucks, and that kind of thing. And yeah, we're still kind of fine tuning what that partnership looks like, but it's great, you know. And same thing with the junior NBA, I was able to help, you know, monetarily with that a little bit, and that's amazing because, like Mary says, this community down here needs help. It needs more, or up there, I'm in Eugene, but up there, it needs help to reach some of these kids. Some of these kids are amazing athletes. They fall through the cracks because there's nothing, or maybe parents are working. They can't take them to Portland. They can't bring them down to Eugene. They can't involve them in these programs, and it's sad, you know. And so I was really stoked to see that the Jags and Junior NBA and you and folks that are coming around and giving us some exposure, you know. Yeah. So
yeah, that's what we're all about. Mm-hmm. And it's I'm glad you're on board and that you're a partner. We're working on a partnership with you. I think one thing that I want to talk about to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
I think this applies to what we've been doing here and sort of every aspect of your life is your motivational speaking as a health coach. Your motivational speaking and your work as a health coach with your clientele. Mm-hmm. And I've seen many slashes on the different type of coaching that you do.
Sure.
It's spirituality. Mm-hmm. It's health. Mm-hmm. It's bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fitness. Mm-hmm. From based on your story. Mm-hmm. And the various ups and downs, ebbs and flows, the roller coaster ride that you've had from recovery to moving around to owning your own business, what's a key takeaway? What's a theme that you want sort of people listening to take away from that, and maybe some wisdom that you can impart on people through this podcast?
Oh, that's a great question, man. Wish we could wrap that up into a nice catchphrase, right? There's just so many nuggets. I would say, and it might not be a typical thing to say in my space, but be vulnerable, meaning be honest with people, because what I've noticed in my journey is that when I ran from some of my life truths, my struggles, my addiction, my mental health, I didn't grow. But when I began to get more vulnerable and let people know where I'm at, things exponentially grew. Like my business grew, my relationships got better. And especially as a man, we'll say just a man with muscles, right? We're not raised to talk about feelings and things like that, right? But I would beg to differ that if you're vulnerable and honest about what you're going through, that could be a catalyst for a lot of things, right? So that might be separate than any other entrepreneur or business owner or people that are successful in business will tell you, or who have big bank accounts will tell you. But this is what I'll also tell you, is that I know a lot of people that make a lot of money and they have a lot of bad health. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of unhealthy relationships. They have all these things, right? And because they were so focused on making that dollar, you know what I mean? Everything else suffers. So be vulnerable. Be willing to tell your story. And just surround yourself around those that you want to be like. For me, again, I had to reach outside of the home, had to reach outside of the Oxford House to network with those people that are smarter, more seasoned than me, because it takes a team, to build. And so I don't know if there was a catchphrase to that, but what's been very instrumental in my success is being vulnerable. you know, and talking about those hard things, because we all are unique, but we aren't as unique as we think, right? You know what I mean? In the problems and things that we face, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And so that would be some wisdom that I would give to people, because mm-hmm. again, I think that opens a lot of doors. So
are there any upcoming speaking events that mm-hmm. you're hosting? And take this opportunity maybe to tell people like where they can find you, where they can
sure.
find more about Akita Clips, about you as a health mm-hmm. and wellness okay. coach. Where can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. I have, you know, social media and Instagram platforms. Akita Clips, one word, AKIDACLIPS is where you could find me on Facebook or Instagram. And then Facebook, just my regular name, Akita Ramsey. And then my business barbering page my pro page and athletic page is Akita IFBB Pro on Instagram. You know, so any of those platforms folks can find me on. I don't have a YouTube or anything like that at this point, but with the motivational speaking, I actually just kind of fell into that. I mean, I do motivational speaking in my job as a coach, and I've shared my testimony a little bit with those in town, and but I'm actually getting ready to speak at a casino here in Oregon to the upper management to speak to, I believe there's a disconnect I hear between staff and management, which, you know, mm. trickles down into not that great a business. So someone had heard my story.
Yeah.
It was one of my clients who was a chiropractor. He asked me if I had ever done any speaking. I'm like, well, variations. And so they reached out to me. We had a conversation. And so now next month I'm going to be over there. And if that can open up a door to you know, speak other places, great. And again, it's making sure that I keep the imposter syndrome out of my head. Like, you know, that we talk about, hey, you know, walk through these doors if you're meant to walk through them. Don't walk through them because you want to get seen. You know what I mean? Don't walk through them because you want to be popular. Don't walk through them because you want to be rich. Walk through them because you can relate with so many people, mm-hmm. and you can let them know that they can win, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what my motivation is. Yeah, money's cool and it pays bills, but if you can make an impact on somebody's life, bro, you know what I mean? And so I look forward to seeing what that looks like. And low key, I've wanted to be a motivational speaker growing up. I remember yeah. being in high school and seeing some of these amazing people come through the high school and tell the story, and you're thinking they're bigger than life. And I knew that, again, you know, even though I know we're wrapping up, but even when I was in the middle of my, you know, my alcohol addiction, I would be at the party and I would be trying to bring people up. I'm trying to preach life to them and everything like that, and tell them, hey man, you know, I went from here to over here, even though we're at the party right now, but that's okay, that's besides the point, right? Let's just focus on something good, right? Let's go to the gym Monday, like, you know what yep. I mean? And yep. so it kind of feels natural to be able to do something like that. So
yeah,
wow, yeah man,
thank you so much for sharing your story, mm-hmm. coming on. Yeah. I feel like we could have done a lot longer sure. of an interview, but yeah. I think we you know, got about an hour's worth of getting the pleasure to talk to you, hear mm-hmm. your story, mm-hmm. Hear a bit about your business, all your different endeavors. Mm-hmm. You're a fascinating guy. Appreciate you having you on.
I appreciate you having yeah. me, bro.
Yeah.
Shoot. All right.
Well, thanks everybody so much. If you want to find out more about Akita Ramsey or Akita Clips and all his different endeavors, I'll be dropping all of the social media links and social media accounts that he mentioned earlier in the description of this one. So you can find it there wherever you're listening. Appreciate you again, Keita. This has been Isaac Doobie on Jags Beyond the Baseline. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Jaguars Beyond the Baseline. If you want to find out more about the Jaguars, you can go to their website at wvjags.com or follow them on Instagram at wvjags.